Blog Talk Radio.
Strawberries, cherries. You know, if I could just make a decent cup of coffee, I could relax.
Seriously, Brad, if you treat her right, she might make you a darn good employee.
I didn't know anything about the gold standard, I'm afraid, but I do love little kittens.
And you drank red wine from a box.
Not these ladies.
So raise your glass if you are
They're smart, sexy, and opinionated. It's time for the Red Wine Show with your hosts, Laura Lee, Jody, and Diane. They're serving up a little wine with your wine on Old Con Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to the Red Wine. We are hoping that you learn something in the next hour and a half as you hang out with us. Diane, how was your day today?
Oh, just absolutely fine. It was freezing, very windy, sunny. There is still sun, so it's all good.
And you still have snow on the ground, right?
I still have a glacier in my front yard. I kid you not. It's taller than I am.
Well, that's not good.
No. No, I'm done with winter, and I know spring is in a couple of days, but it just cannot come soon enough.
Well, yeah, I don't blame you. Well, right now, I have in my ink-stained printer in hands article I just posted from the New York Post. It's on the Twitter page, and it's on Facebook. And this is what we're going to be discussing tonight. We're going to have a guest, Chief Joe McDowell. Am I saying that right, Diane?
McDowell, yep.
McDowell. And he's going to discuss with us the whole issue of what's going on in Ferguson, what's going on across the United States with the increase in the animosity towards the police. We are going to discuss with Stacey Lennox her article that she wrote for WayneDupree.com. How a school in Virginia took an annual Black History Month program and turned it into some sort of a anti-police message, and indoctrinating the children into thinking that all Black children need to be terrified of police. And we're going to be talking about this New York Post article that goes into depth on a new program that I'm not sure who in the United States thought was a good idea, but I think it's the most racist, damaging program that we've seen yet. And I think it's pretty apropos we're discussing this tonight, considering Starbucks wants us to discuss race, have a you know, open conversation about it. So I'm going to dive right in. I don't know if people are aware out there in this great United States that there are sessions being taught currently that teachers needed to go to regarding new discipline programs that are led by the Restorative Justice for Oakland Youth. This is the one program that was called Race and Restorative Justice, an African-centered restorative justice approaches. Basically what this is it's teaching students and teachers that instead of discipline in the classroom, we need to have talk circles and we need to discuss why the student just called his teacher a bitch. Because I guess sending him to the principal's office is somehow racist. So that is, to me, I think it's insulting to Black people everywhere that somehow we're saying their children are not capable of manners. But for whatever reason, let me read to you from the article what this said. After a Black high school boy repeatedly punched his teacher in the face, sending her to the emergency room, the teacher, who is white, was advised by the assistant principal not to press charges. The administrator lectured her about how hard it is for young black men to overcome a criminal record. Even worse, she was told she should examine what role she, as a white woman, holding unconscious racial biases, played in this attack. This is according to the Oregon Willamette Week newspaper. So, I don't know, Diane, what do you think about this?
Well, I have deep concerns about this because one of the things that they tried to accomplish when they did the desegregation of schools was to not create tiers. And by doing this, you're creating a new tier for particular students. My question would be, which I didn't find out reading this article, for example, if you are a Hispanic student and you do the same exact thing, do you also get restorative justice or are you suspended? Same thing for a white student, for an Asian student, particularly targeted at black students. Because what you're creating is, as in this article stated, you're creating a hostile work environment for teachers. That's a safety concern because when you have a teacher that is allowed to be groped in class while she is teaching, and that person is only going to be sent to the vice principal to have a little chat, and then you get sent back to the room, you know, the room, what message are you sending this teacher? Because this student is then going to go out, irregardless of his race, and he's going to say, I can grope anybody I want because I don't have consequences for it. And it's not something I've heard of in the state that I'm in, I can assure you of that. Will it work? I don't think so. I think what they need to do is address the problem of why it is happening, where the lack of respect is coming from, which we know is usually the family unit.
Right.
I think this is really going to lead to a road to disaster. You're going to find far more lawsuits that are going to be against school districts. Taxpayers are going to be paying out the nose because this is exactly what's going to end up happening.
Well, students, this is from the article as well. Students who bully classmates can no longer be removed from classrooms except for the worst offenses and only then with the consent of a district supervisor.
And most times you can't get a district supervisor on the phone right then and there as the offense occurs.
Right. Well, one of the kids told his teacher, one of the teachers is saying, I was terrified and bullied by a fourth grade student. She says, this is to the Los Angeles Times, the black student told me to back off, bitch. I told him to go to the office and he said, no, bitch, and no one can make me.
Know that at that young of an age, they will.
Yes.
Progressively get worse, become more violent, you know, and then at that point, you know, when is the police get involved? Normally, a rule of thumb is if you have a frequent flyer, we'll call them, the police gets involved, and they usually have what's called a CHINS, it's a child in need of services, and that's when you have to go to the court to have this child. But if they're blocking all of that by doing these little hand-holding circles, you know, it's like anybody that can manipulate the system. They're going to know, I know what I need to say when I'm in that little talking circle, and then I'm going to get sent right back to the classroom. Now, a lot more school districts are using the approach of an in-school suspension because a lot of times students think if they get suspended, they can just go hang out, watch TV, whatever. So they are doing in-school, but not reading circles. These kids are removed from the classroom. They're in a particular, you know, learning environment room where they actually have to do their homework, but they cannot sit there and be in the classroom until whatever the issue is gets resolved through parents' meetings and whatnot. But this is outrageous. I mean, I'm outraged. When I was beside myself when I read this article.
It says here, in June, Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel announced that the district, as part of a suspension and expulsion reduction plan, was moving away from a zero-tolerance policy and promoting restorative practices. So
do you know what zero-tolerance is? Usually zero-tolerance is if a student brings a gun, weapon, knife, something into that school. That is what the zero tolerance policy is. So if he is saying now that they're going to reduce the zero tolerance policy, that means any student can now bring a gun into school, they can bring a knife into school, and what is going to be the consequence? This is what they are opening up.
Well, let me tell you, it says right here, one of the things that it said, let me read here. Oh, so far this school year, the Tribune reports, students have suffered little consequences for infractions as serious as groping a teacher and bringing hollow point bullets to class. So I guess Diana has to be really damn bad.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So in one thing, we're sitting here talking about how we want to reduce bullying in schools. Yet now we're saying, no, we need to have talk therapy, talk it out. How successful do you think this program is going to be? And how many children are going to have to suffer and how many teachers are going to get harmed before we go, yeah, you know, that wasn't a good idea?
And how many lawsuits will be filed? How much taxpayer dollars are going to go? I mean, granted, most of them are going to get settled by the insurance companies. It's still taxpayer dollars.
Right.
Why don't the taxpayers have a say in this? They should have a say in this. It's not just parents. This is taxpayers as well. And,
right.
And the fact
right.
of the matter is, you know, I find, and I agree 100% with you, what you said before. It is an insult to families of Black students who are successful, who push their children, who, you know, if their children does something wrong, feel that they should, you know, pay for that, whatever it is that they did wrong. It's an insult. It is an insult that they, what was the phrase that they put in that article, that they are more prone to be more emotional and physical with their thoughts and response. Pretty emotional and physical with my responses, too.
Well, Diane, don't you know that your white privilege affects how you could teach? I'm sorry. My children have always gone to school in a mixed classroom, and I have never, ever seen their minority students in the classroom ever behave in a destructive manner, nor were they not. They've always been capable of minding their manners, and they have this to me is so insulting. I'm sorry, I'm getting really flustered here. I just think it's insulting. If I were a parent of a Black child and somebody told me that they, you know, my child wasn't capable of behaving because they were Black, I would just go full postal. I would just be furious.
Probably not a good example to use, Jody.
Well, okay, this brings us to the other topic. In Virginia, there was an event. Instead of having their typical Black History Month assembly, it was a different agenda this year. And we're going to go to a clip from Todd Starnes, where he gives some examples of things the students actually said during the program. So here you go.
Parents in Orange County, Virginia got quite a surprise last week at the annual Black History Month celebration. Now, it was supposed to be a school district-wide salute to Black history, but it turned out to be an anti-police propaganda forum. One parent, who happens to be a deputy sheriff, documented the entire event and alerted the Facebook page Stop the Cop Haters. Students wore T-shirts that read, "I Can't Breathe" and "Black Lives Matter." One of the evening's performers told the audience, "I'm from Ferguson, Missouri. I was told to put my hands up. I did, and I was shot 7 times. My name is Michael Brown." And get a load of the special readings for the show, Voices, The Exhausting Task of Being Black in America. Does My Black Life Matter? They Don't Really Care About Us.
Yes. This is what they did. Can you even believe that? Can you even believe that the program, instead of discussing the wonderful things that Black people have contributed in our United States, this is what the children were saying? It just seems
they were surprised.
But seriously, so what we talked about before and what we're talking about with this, and then we wonder why we have Ferguson happen. So let's get some history on it, what exactly went on. We're going to have Stacy Lennox, who wrote an article about this. We have it posted on our Facebook and on Twitter. It's also at LaneDupree.com. Stacy, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Yes, thank you.
No technical problems.
So, can you tell us what happened with this school?
Sure. Basically, this story kind of piqued my interest. It was tagged to me by a Facebook friend of mine who actually attended the school district as a child. And I opened myself up to say, hey, any parents want to talk to this, you know, I'd love to speak to you. And several parents did contact me on social media. I had the chance to speak in person to a few of them. And they all told me basically the same story. Now, the folks that I'm talking to, very much like the police officer that originally posted on Facebook, are the parents of elementary school children for the most part. And their children were doing a portion of this presentation. Now, what you have to understand is this particular event has been an annual event at the high school open to the public for years. Never been an issue before. When they got to the event, they noticed at the door where they were selling tickets, some of the girls had on the t-shirts which said "I can't breathe" and "Black Lives Matters" on them. And they kind of thought maybe it was an individual statement among a certain group of students or something like that. They took their children, all third graders, about 8 and 9 years old, to the choir room where they had to go to prepare, and then proceeded to the auditorium to watch the event itself. You know, along with the statement that you heard the commentator read, there were about 7 of those, and the ones that all of the parents could accurately recall, one had to do with Michael Brown, one had to do with a 7-year-old child who was shot by police during a raid of his home, and the other one was Eric Garner, of course, the situation in New York City, which the "I Can't Breathe" hashtag was related to. You know, the parents were given programs, and it was kind of like unfolding in front of them, like, what exactly is this? Because it wasn't the program they were expecting. You know, as you said, Jody, they were expecting a program about Black history and contributions and more of a celebration that brings people together. And, you know, as this unfolded, it started to feel very divisive. They stayed until their children sang a song, and the elementary school choir teacher had prepared a melody of Motown hit. They said, adorable program. The teacher at the elementary school did a beautiful job. She was initially named in some of the Facebook posts as one of the coordinators of this event. She got some hateful responses as a result, and the parents I spoke to wanted me to let everybody know she was actually away on personal business, so she did not attend either the dress rehearsal or the final performance. Somebody was subbing in her place, and that everything the music teacher did around that particular event was very appropriate, not a problem at all. Unfortunately, the children had attended the full dress rehearsal, so their parents, at the end of the performance, actually went to get them, decided they weren't going to stay. One parent described it as like a mass exodus of everyone who had an elementary school child. Originally, they were told their children couldn't come with them until intermission. A few of them started to say, no, that's not okay, and a teacher actually started bringing their children to them. I think the biggest thing I heard from all the parents I spoke to, either in Messenger or over the phone, was that they felt it was extremely poor judgment on the part of the school for a couple of reasons. Number one, these children are 8 and 9 years old. And some of the statements, like the one you heard the commentator read earlier in the show, an 8-year-old can't process that, number one. Number two, the Michael Brown statement is a lie. The Department of Justice told us so. So why would a teacher allow a student to even get up and say that? Do you know what I mean? It was just so,
right.
So incorrect that, I mean, as a teacher, don't you want your kids to at least be grounded in factual information?
Yes.
And then, you know, number three, they're at home now with relatively young children undoing the damage. One of the mothers said that her daughter became enamored with running around the house yelling, "Hands up, don't shoot," because it was part of a song that the older children had put together that she heard during dress rehearsal.
Oh, great.
When another mother asked her daughter, you know, "What did you get out, you know, what did you learn from that presentation?" Very bluntly, she was told, "Cops shoot black people."
Wow.
Yes.
You know,
and one child is so awful.
Well, one child was exceptionally disturbed about the story about the 8-year-old. "Mommy, mommy, why would police shoot a 7-year-old little boy?"
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
These kids can't process this information.
Right.
Certainly, you know, at a certain age in high school, discussing current events, maybe this content was appropriate. Maybe appropriate for a presentation of nothing but high school students. I don't know. I would hope in most ways that a school event wouldn't be that politicized. But certainly having these much younger children exposed to that information, I mean, if it was my child, I'd be furious.
We do have Snarky Mushroom is on the line, and I believe he would like to make some comments as well, if that's okay with both of you.
Yeah.
Sure. He, for our audience, this is actually somebody from the school district, so he wants to go by, he doesn't want to give his real name. So there
Snarky.
You go. That's He's not really
Good
named.
Good evening, ladies.
Mushroom.
Good evening,
Mr. Mushroom.
How are you doing?
Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good.
Hey, some of the things that, I mean, there was a lot of rhetoric that was being posted on Facebook, and there were a lot of people that were very upset simply over the shock factor of it. This is, like your previous caller was saying, this is something that was very highly unexpected. I know a few of the sheriff's deputies in the county. They are not to contradict the sheriff, Mark Amos, who's a very good sheriff. Don't get me wrong. You could tell in the posture of the sheriff's deputies in the county, they're a little nervous. They are a little nervous, and it's understandable why. The content, I mean, I wasn't there, don't get me wrong, I did not see the presentation itself, but once we got word of it, there were a lot of connotations, there was a lot of discussions in my community about it as well. There were several people that were very upset about it. I've seen some of the Twitter accounts from a few of the people that were involved and stuff like that. Now, to my understanding, the two teachers that were involved with this have not been named. The school board itself has taken responsibility for this, although I don't know why. Dr. Tanner, the school superintendent, made a statement on Friday that only one parent had contacted her over this, but there's just no, you know, they didn't compensate for the media explosion over the weekend. So there has since been a lot of that. Tuesday, we received a robocall from the school district stating that there had been threats made against the school and that there would be an increased police presence at the school as well today. I don't know if anything unfolded from that at all.
Can I ask was it threats?
They were non-specified threats.
Okay, and then do you know, do you have any idea at all, is it the, which community is the most upset? Is it the parents upset that the kids are exposed to this? Or is it the Black Lives Matter community that is upset people are complaining about it?
It's more the parents that were upset that this was thrust into the community without any knowledge of it. They weren't prepared for this kind of thing in any manner at all. Had they been prepared for it, saying, "Hey, this is what the presentation is going to be this year," it may not have turned into such a dust-up that it is right now. Now, something about the county itself, it's a very integrated county. There are, I mean, you can't go through this county without seeing, you know, multiple interracial relationships. I mean, it's not what I would call an overly wealthy county, considering 90% of the people in this county are on some form of government assistance. There's, like, no jobs here and everything else. So they've got nothing to do, you know, once they get a hold of something like this, that becomes, you know, something that they do as a pastime because there's nothing else for them to do here. So I can understand, you know, the one young lady that really got in a twist over this, you know, on the Black Lives Matter side. But I don't know how much of that is, you know, because a lot of this, you know, had to have been developed prior to that DOJ report coming out.
Well, I think, you know, certainly statistics support that. Looking statistics up on the county itself, 23% of the population is African American. You know, locally, which is higher than the national average, you know, total in the population. There's a fair amount of folks that identify as more than one race. You know, but what was interesting to me in this whole thing was actually the school board's response. You know, there definitely were threats from the students. We were going to bring our T-shirts. We were going to, you know, protest outside the school, and nobody really understood what that might look like. And certainly given events in Ferguson and other towns caused for concern. Several of the parents I was speaking to kept their children out of the high school on Monday, and at least half of that group kept them home again today because there were threats over the weekend and then additional threats. Now, the school district's not being real specific, but those with children in high school know who the other students are. We're screen capping them and sending to their parents, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a couple of them actually posted on the TL right now. But I guess, you know, in addition, what I really heard was, not my child, not yet. Again, just the parents I spoke to were more disturbed by the complete lack of judgment on the part of the adults at the high school that allowed young children to hear this kind of conceptual stuff at such a young age because they are not at all prepared to process it. And the fact that they didn't understand the full content of the program, I mean, they could have elected to not have their children participate.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Exactly. This is a very sheltered community out here. We have one high school that everybody, I mean, a large majority of the adults of this county went to that high school. Their kids go to this high school. Their parents went to this high school. It's the one high school in the entire county. So it really becomes the focus because everybody went to, you know, to this school. So it becomes a combining factor in the community itself. And when you have something that pops up like this, then it becomes the one thing that everybody will talk about. The problem is, though, nobody out in public is going to be willing to discuss this because nobody wants to set up, you know, a potentially hostile situation.
Fear of retribution.
Well, because of the kind of blowback too. I mean, none of the parents I spoke to wanted to be named by name. You know, they just wanted their feedback out there because once the school music teacher started getting those messages, it's kind of like people on either side of this could take blowback from it. They have small children, and they didn't want to say anything publicly. Now, I guess the last I heard, there is a school board meeting scheduled for Monday from 7 to 9 where people are going to be given the opportunity to speak if they sign up to do so in advance.
Yeah.
You know, nobody expects at this point that any of the teachers involved will be named or identified. Should there be any disciplinary action for staff, et cetera? I mean, obviously, from an employment perspective, that needs to remain private. So I don't think anybody's expecting that. But, you know, there were some statements out there that people heard from various school district officials that, you know, maybe 1% of parents were complaining, and the parents I'm talking to are saying it's way more than 1%.
It's a lot more than that simply because once your name gets out there in this community, since it's a very small community and everybody knows everybody, everybody knows where everybody lives. So that's why there's a lot of fear as far as people don't, I mean, it's also why I didn't want my name out there, because
sure,
I don't want retribution
sure
coming back on me or my family. So,
we're gonna follow this. We're gonna keep tabs on what's going on. So we'll keep touch with you on Twitter, and we have our other guest who's called in. We're gonna take a break. We're gonna listen to. We're gonna pay some bills, as they say. And when we come back, we have with us Chief Joe McDowell, and thank you so much, Mr. Mushroom, for calling in and updating us on what's going on. And thank you so much, Stacy, because I'm glad you did this article on WayneDupree.com. And, you know, it's just amazing to me the anti-police rhetoric that's going on out there. And I really think we need to address this. So we'll take a break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Women are sold on Comet because Comet sells itself in the sink. You've seen the test. Comet removes tough, greasy food stains like these when other leading cleansers can't.
And I've tried so many things, and Comet is the thing that works.
Women are sold on Comet.
You're listening to The Red Wine Show. Would you like to talk with us? Dial 646-716-7039 and talk with us live right here on AltCon Radio. You're listening to the alternative source of news, talk, and music for today's unconventional conservatives. This is AltCon Radio.
And I believe we are back, are we not? Are you there, Jody? All righty then.
You are back.
Well, where's
we're
Jody?
Back, yes.
You guys busted my chop for what? And we are back.
I thought you were opening.
I was opening. I was saying, and we are back in silence. Anyhow.
Well, the truth is I had to run to the restroom, so... This is what you call live radio.
All righty then. And I believe we have our special guest who has called in, Chief Joe McDowell, who is the police chief in the town that I live in. Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Oh, you sound excellent on the radio. Yes, by the way, Joe has it that if he ever sees my car driving fast down the road, he should look the other way, but he won't. Right, Joe?
Oh, no. It's a parked vehicle.
Yeah, he's checking your white privilege.
Yeah. Actually, I got to go for a ride in the police car, and you didn't even make me sit in the back.
Well, we're going to a function.
Yes, I know. But you did do a traffic stop while I was in there. That was really neat.
Yeah, that was an assist. That was good.
Were you able to listen in at all on the previous conversations, Joe?
Oh, I've had it going the whole time, yes.
Okay, great. So what do you think about the do you see these future children that are currently in the classroom not getting any discipline, do you see issues with that in the future when they are grown men?
I would say yes. As a former school resource officer, that was our biggest issue. If you did not address the disruptive children inside the classroom, it just added to more chaos. And teachers right now already have their hands full trying to handle anywhere from 20 to 30 children in a class. And I understand some schools that's not even, you know, there's more students than that. So you have one teacher in a classroom trying to handle a disruptive student. It takes away from the education of the other students. And not only that, are you taking away from the education of the other students, the chaos that ensues. So they have to get the children out of that classroom at that time to address the issue, regardless of what it is. Because if you do not separate that child from the rest of them, then the others are going to start to join in with the chaos.
I mean, what do you think of like these like reading circles where they're no longer being suspended or sent home, or they're basically allowed back into the classroom, you know, so far as groping a teacher? I mean, I believe we've all probably seen the video that was out there of the teacher that literally got cold cocked right in the classroom, knocked out cold by a student.
There's a big difference between some disruptive behavior, which, you know, you've always had over the years, and a criminal act. You cannot allow a criminal act back in the classroom. You need to address that. That needs to be addressed through the court system. So if you can't have teachers out there, they have a hard enough job as is. So you need to ensure their safety as well as the safety of the children. That's why we've had all the different laws that have been passed. You know, safe school reports are put out there. Why are they put out there? To address certain behavior that's taken place that the government has determined needs to go to law enforcement. You want to have most of your cases handled within the school. You want the school administration to have first shot of addressing these cases. But if you have a case of a teacher being groped, that needs to go to the next level. That means you have to have law enforcement getting involved in that. And when you get law enforcement involved in that, you have to also get the court system involved. And that's the only way to handle those cases.
I agree.
What's that?
Well, I mean, I know some states have put laws in place. I believe in our own state, in New Hampshire, it wasn't until, what, this past year or the past couple of years that they put the CHINS back in place, didn't they?
The CHINS was there. There was some restructuring of that that whole process.
Which is child in need of services, correct?
Child in need of services, which is, those are cases that are used for children that have not been deemed a delinquent. The Delinquent Act is anything that would be a misdemeanor if committed by an adult. A misdemeanor or a felony, I should say. So if they're deemed a delinquent, then they get charged under a delinquency petition that goes to juvenile court. If a child is found to be in need of services, that means they're committing some sort of offense that is not deemed to be a delinquency charge. So it would be like a violation or a status offense. It's an offense that occurred because of their age. So you would take those through the CHINS process.
Right.
So have you heard about anything like this yet in New Hampshire? It's let me just tell you one of the workshops that they had to go to. It's by the Pacific Educational Group. That's on the West Coast. And there's also a program in, I know, New York and in Chicago. But one of the things that this PEG workshop, the Pacific Educational Group, one of the titles was Decentering Whiteness in School Discipline, White Supremacy, White Privilege, and Racial Oppression, Getting in on Courageous Conversation. So the goal is that too many black kids are getting kicked out of school, and instead of blaming it on parenting, they're blaming it on teachers and on discipline. And I'm just wondering, if you had a child that was violent in the classroom, you know, well, they said that bullying is being tolerated and even the hollow point bullets and groping were being tolerated. Can you still cuff a child, handcuff a child in New Hampshire at school for inappropriate behavior?
For criminal acts, you could.
For fighting, can you?
And for fighting, yes.
Okay.
It depends. We try each... each agency has their way of looking at it, their own philosophy of how to handle things, especially with the children. You try to use the least amount of force as necessary to gain the desired result. So you want to break up a fight, you want to use the least amount of force is what I'll say. And that could be just a matter of putting hands on, moving the children to the side. Sometimes you actually have to put them in a bear hug, use an arm bar or something like that, because if you get the larger kids, and if you've been in the school, you see some of these kids, even in the eighth grade, that they're bigger than me.
Yeah, and, yeah.
Well, sometimes you're going to have to use the that necessary force. But we do run into so many I know in the school district that we cover, or a couple of them around us, and it's usually pretty common within the state of New Hampshire, that they don't want the teachers going hands-on with the students. So that's where the police department is involved. We get involved, we show up, and we'll help quell the situation. But the students need to be taken out of that area. If you don't move the students, you do not break up the fight or the argument. If you don't move them out of that area, you're just going to have a bigger problem because other kids are going to join in. And so it's kind of difficult. You want them to learn, but you don't want them to be there causing a bigger problem. So you want to move them out of that area.
And there's been times, I believe, where you've recommended removing the students from the classroom instead of the student causing the disruption, because that's the safest way to get control of the situation, I think. So there's different.
Okay, maybe I lost you on that. You want to remove the student that's causing that problem. You do.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, there are times when they've recommended removing the students out of the classroom if that particular student refuses to leave, for example.
Correct.
I think is something that's been done in the past until the situation be controlled. And I mean, we've even seen it in our schools where you have students as young as third grade, fourth grade, that are very can be disruptive and can be causing harm
that
to
is
teachers,
correct.
To adults, And I guess that's where I get frustrated, where it's not just, you know, it's not a race issue. It's realistically, it's a parenting issue.
It comes down to that. It comes down to sometimes not just parenting, but sometimes we do have students that have other needs that need to be addressed within a clinical setting,
right.
Not a school setting.
Exactly.
So In your professional police opinion, what do you see happening across the United States right now? I mean, do you think Ferguson has made this worse?
To a degree, it's brought some stuff to light. But on the same token, it's allowed people to jump on the bandwagon and start reacting before they have all the answers. And that was the hardest thing to sit back and deal with and not talk about, is to see what's going on, you know, and I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the information that took place down there. But in my time of doing this job, the biggest thing I learned was to gather your evidence before you jump to a conclusion. And
sure.
And what we've been seeing is the fact that a lot of people jumped to a conclusion without getting all the facts. And so once you start to allow that to happen, it's a big snowball, and you can't stop it. You can't stop that avalanche that's coming down your way because everybody piled on. And with the media did not help matters because everyone wants to get that story out there. So you get the story out there and find out some of the reporting is not correct. Some of it is tainted. Some of it is exaggerated. It just leads to bigger problems, and I think that's what they had, and that's what they're still dealing with.
Right. Did you read the report? One of the things that they brought up was the using traffic tickets, routine traffic stops, to generate income, and I had to laugh because I live in a pretty affluent white community. And that happens here as well. So I don't know. Were you able to read the report?
The state in which I live, that money doesn't go back to the town or the city. What happens is if an officer issues a traffic summons, that money, part of it goes to the police academy for future training. Part of that money goes to the state, and it's dispersed, whether it be through victim witness or other programs as such. But it's nothing that comes directly to the town. So it's
sure.
not like we go out and we run to say, hey, you got to write 10 tickets today. And all that money is, all that revenue is coming back to the PD. That's not the case where I work.
Right. Right. But it is.
Yeah. I wish.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that my friend who was a cop always said is if the law is 25 and you're going 40, you broke the law. So you're going to get a ticket. So it's not that you're being unfairly stopped. If you don't speed, you won't get a ticket. I mean,
and that's correct. Okay, everybody's like, okay, I see so many people get upset. Okay, we'll just take motor vehicle for instance. They get upset. They're only driving 55. The speed limit is 55. That is the ceiling. You're not allowed to go above that. But we know in reality it does happen. So
right.
We tend to give people a buffer. And so I won't put it over the air, I have a buffer, and it's pretty lenient. Diane,
you can text me what it is.
Diane knows what my buffer is. I have a pretty lenient one, because the way I look at it is if I stopped everybody for 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, I would not have time to do the rest of my job.
And I wouldn't have
right.
to pay taxes to the town.
And you know, it's not the fact that we don't see the money, because eventually through society that money does come back to you in some certain way. But it's not
sure.
like that you have to, you know, for my guys, they've been told, just go out there, do your stuff. The only thing that I ask them to do is I tell them I want positive contacts during the day. I don't tell them how many traffic stops they have to make. I don't tell them, you know, how many tickets I want to see, because that's not what I'm about. And I think
right.
if you gear your setup as to you have to write so many tickets to prove that you're doing something correct, it's just not what we're about. That's then we've kind of lost sight of what our job is. If I go out there and I sit and run stationary radar and I get no stops whatsoever, but yet everybody slow down, I did my job.
Right.
That's what
right.
we did. And you know, some people like, and I know I can't defend everybody out there. There are those that will come in and they'll brag that I've had so many stops. I'm like, that doesn't make you a good cop. There's more to this job than traffic stops. There's more to this job than arrests. It's nice to know that you know how to do a traffic stop. It's nice to know that you can write a citation if need be. It's nice to know that you know how to make a proper arrest. But it's not everything that this job is made up of.
Because basically, and that goes, and I can tell you that we're very much in support of Joe's type of policing, which is he's using the community police approach. And I think if a lot of districts, say like Ferguson or whatnot, use the community policing, and I'll let Joe explain what the community policing approach is, but it's a bridge of building trust between the residents and the police department. And I'll let you explain, Joe, what the philosophy of the community policing is, but I think this is what a lot more police departments should be looking at. But if you could explain, you know, what your approach is, I think that would be great.
Well, there are lots of agencies throughout the United States that operate under the community policing philosophy. And all that is a philosophy that was developed, let's just say, a long time ago, before my time. Okay. And it's involving your community to make your community a better place to live. And what they stated is that police officers are the only makeup of the community, the only people in the community that are paid to give enforcement or for policing standards. They're the only people in the community that are paid to conduct policing activities on a 24/7 basis. But it takes everybody in the community to conduct a policing activity. You know, we're out there, but we're not out there all that we don't see all the crimes. So we need eyes and ears, and we need people to help us. And when they help us try to make their community better by stopping certain activity, then we're working together with each other. You know, some people say, well, you're ratting us out. It's not ratting somebody out. It's making your community better. I come in to help you make the place a little bit better. So come up with some ideas. You can have programs, Community Watch, Neighborhood Watch, school resource officers are a wonderful thing to have out there so that kids start to understand what police officers are like. And when you have a school resource officer, the officer has to be one that will adapt to the school. They have to want to be there. There has to be a good process put in place before you have a school resource officer inside the school, because not all police officers are cut out to be SROs. I had the luxury of doing mine. I worked at a high school and a middle school, and every once in a while I would go into the elementary school. And it was pretty good. I had a good following. I loved it. Had a great time doing it. But you have to have the right person to do that job. And they just don't go in there for enforcement procedures. Matter of fact, when I was the SRO, I took very little enforcement action when I was at the school, because I wanted the school to be able to control or handle their situations right then and there. There were times that I would have to get involved, which was fine. And the good thing about it was when I got involved, most of the students understood why I was there, and they never gave me a hard time. But when students would get stopped out in the street, the officers would call me at home and say, hey, listen, I got one of your students stopped. They want to talk to you. And I just tell them, I would explain the difference between my role as a school resource officer and their role as a street officer. And it usually made things work out pretty good.
Oh, good.
Right.
Can I just ask quick, just because of time and everything, so can you walk us through if there's a situation like what happened in Ferguson where one of your officers or you has to shoot someone? What do you think, hopefully that's never happened or ever will happen. What do you think happened in Ferguson? What do you think went wrong?
What do I think went wrong? The biggest thing that went wrong was everybody jumped to conclusions right off.
Well, sure.
Jumped to conclusions. Without knowing all the ins and outs, it's hard to say what went wrong. I don't think it does it justice for me to say something. I'm not there. I'm not in that environment. Yes, I come from down south, but I haven't been down there in a couple decades. But what went wrong was the fact that a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon. I think when it came down to, I think they started to place blame before they had the facts.
Right.
You needed the facts in place. And you don't want to, in that situation, you don't want to walk, you don't want to take very slow, methodical steps, because you don't want it dragging out, but you want to pick up the pace a little bit, but not so fast that you're missing vital evidence. You don't want to go so fast that you're overseeing witnesses that would be key to the case at hand.
What do you think about how they brought in the National Guard?
Well, I understand why they would have done that. Things were getting out of control, and I don't think if we were able to take a few steps back, they were able to take a few steps back and try and quail the situation a little bit differently. Too many people were jumping to conclusions. They already
right.
You're very ahead. The officer convicted, and it's unfortunate that everything happened the way it did. And then somewhere later down the road, they basically came out and, for lack of a different word, exonerated the officer. Okay, they didn't indict him. The federal government did not pursue charges on him. So it just shows that people hopped on board and started fueling the fire before they should have. They should have taken that step back. let things kind of progress the way they should have. The state in which I work, if there was to be a shooting, then our major crimes unit, not mine, but the state police major crime unit, is the unit that comes in, and they do the investigation. None of my officers are part of the investigation. So we'd sit back. I'd have my number two with me, and first thing we'd do is make sure all officers were okay, they're all set, make sure anybody in the area was all set. We want to make sure first aid was administered right off the bat. But as far as the investigation goes, that would be turned over to the major crimes unit, and they would come in. You want that separate entity doing that investigation.
Sure, sure.
To have the state police major crimes come in, is that typical in the larger cities like Manchester, Nashua, or do they conduct their own?
You're going to see with an officer-involved shooting, you're going to see, and I'm not naming cities, Diane, but you would see, that's major crimes. That's usually their gig. They will come in and conduct those investigations. In the bigger cities, one of which you spoke, I don't know what their protocol is, because we have the smaller town, but the big cities, they're going to have somebody on their detail assigned to work with the major crimes unit. And it would be for us, if we had a major event, major crimes came in, I'd have a liaison officer, and he would probably be my number two. Number two would be there, and you know who my number two is. He's a very good officer, well-liked, well-respected, and he would be my liaison to that detail. And all they're there is it just provide, that person would provide support from the police department standpoint, but we don't get involved in the investigation.
Which is smart. So, and then what about the rioting? What about a rioting incidents like they had down there? I know it's not to sit and armchair quarterback them, but I'm just wondering if what we're seeing now with hands up, don't shoot, Black Lives Matter, just the hatred, it seems, towards police officers. We actually have a clip. I don't know how long you can stay, Joe. Can you stay past the top of the hour, or are you limited on time?
No, I'm not limited on time. I'm at home.
Okay. We wanted to play this clip Diane found that she actually found the Black Panthers. They were chanting, they were marching and chanting anti-police rhetoric. And we're just trying to wrap our heads around what's happening in this country right now, because I just think it's terrible that kids, like we were saying at the beginning of the hour, 7-year-old child wondering why police want to shoot little kids, you know. It's just, I don't know what's happening, and we just want to try to get our hands around it. So we're gonna take a break here in just a sec. I think so. Is that right, Hammy? Maybe we will.
Sure.
We're gonna take a break, and when we come back, we're gonna continue to listen to Joe, and we're gonna take your calls.
It certainly is a big bun.
It's a very big bun.
Big fluffy bun.
It's a very big fluffy bun.
Where's the beef?
Some hamburger places give you a lot less beef on a lot of bun.
Where's the beef?
At Wendy's, we serve a hamburger we modestly call a single. And Wendy's single has more beef than the Whopper or Big Mac. At Wendy's, you get more beef and less bun.
Hey, where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody back there.
You want something better. You're Wendy's kind of people.
Hi, y'all. This is Laura Lee McGurnick, host of the Down and Dirty Sports Show here on OpCon. And I want to tell you about the sisterhood at NFLfemale.com. Smart women, smart football. Come have fun with us. NFLfemales.com.
All right, we're back.
Are we back?
Yep. Yeah, we're back. And I had to tell Peanut to go to bed, so I'm sorry. That's why the break happened right when it did. So, you know, we're also moms. This is a show with moms. So there you go. That's the reality of live radio out of your home at bedtime.
That's right.
So back to our discussion. What do you think's happening across the nation right now with the whole Black Lives Matters and the hands up, don't shoot, all of this stuff?
Well, Joe, did you hear where we discussed that program that they put on at the school district?
You were listening to the show earlier? Yes.
I guess my question would be, you know, children as young as elementary school kids are exposed to that.
Yeah.
How does that affect your ability and the office's ability to have children get that level of trust?
If they want to put something on like that, one, I don't know if it's really acceptable for children that age. I think that's more of a mom and dad parenting skit. Mom and dad should be handling those subjects. But if they put that on, then, you know, you take it one step at a time. You work with it because you can't shield your children from everything. They have to understand what's going on. And like Diane, you know the fact that, you know, my son, I have a son with special needs, and there are things that I need to address with him that he may not get. And he's done pretty good with the stuff that goes on. I think he just kind of, you know, he's in la-la land with these things that happen, and I don't think it really affects him in the area in which we're at right now. But we do speak with him about certain topics that come to light, because he will see it on the news. He'll hear it on the radio. And so we just want to make sure that he's aware of that. So in this case here, if they want to put on that skit, they promote everything that's there. You know what? Have a nice, calm response to the speeches, to the poems, to the event itself, and, you know, be able to – you don't want to what's the way I want to look at it? You don't want to go in there and basically blindside the other side, which basically, when I read that article, I'm like, you know, parents are showing up, and all of a sudden it's a different program than they thought. Well, you blindsided the parents. I wasn't too cool with that. But the fact is, the parents can take that information and sit down with their children and talk about what had happened. You don't want to scare them so bad, but you want them to be informed.
I mean, when I was a child, I was always said, if you need help, find a police officer. They will help you. And it's like this generation, it's like, don't go to the police. They will hurt you. And
yes.
And there's a disconnect. It got lost somewhere in the translation between when I was a kid. All right, that was a long time ago, but we won't go there. And now.
Yeah. Well, the fact is, and this is... I'm not saying that people have to run out and buy a school resource officer, because, you know, we don't
Hello?
Have...
Hello?
Yes?
Are you there?
I think
yes.
He just... Some mute. I'm not sure what happened there.
What?
Oh.
Oh, are you... Okay. Now,
back.
Are you, is it me back, or...
We've always been here.
Yeah. Well, say, I don't want everybody to just run out and grab a school resource officer, because the community in which I work... We don't have a school resource officer, but I wanted our officers, myself, my number two, and a couple other officers that we have, they will go to the school. We find events. We come up with bicycle safety rodeo, bicycle rodeo, to go over safety items for the children right at the end of the school year. Read Across America, we would go in and read to the students. We try and get into the school at least once during our shift, if we can be, depending on our workload. My department is very small, and I don't have the luxury of having an officer that can work as a community services officer. But we try to get all the officers to go in and meet with the children, different ages. We try to get out to the different events when they're going to have stuff like Gathering on the Green, when they have the music on Saturday nights at the Green. We try to get out so we can meet with the residents and meet with the children and show up at the town beach. Those are things. You just got to get out there and let children see you as human beings, not just police officers, but human beings. And sometimes, and I know we're in a small town, it's easier, I think it's easier for me to do that than it is in some of these other locations or bigger cities. But it's something you have to work towards.
But keep in mind, too, which the police department, before Joe took over as chief, there was literally no trust level between the community residents and the former police chief. So I can see somehow, you know, and I think Joe will remember this because he was number two at that point in time, but, you know, people felt that they weren't getting responses from the police. They felt they were targeted. Gone now. I mean, we have a very strong community belief in the police department now that Joe brought to the people. And he has that respect now from the parents, and the parents will work with their kids and build up that trust level. But it even happens in small towns where you have, you know, officers that might not necessarily be a good police officer, I guess, if you will. Not that I'm going to ask you to criticize, because you don't need to, but...
No, it's not that. But you have some guys that have different drives when they come in to this job field. I started my career in the military law enforcement, and the first thing I learned there was, you know, it was basically you brought the golden rule back into play, right? I'm not going to treat somebody the same way, you know, I won't treat them differently than the way I would like to be treated. So you try to be a little human with it. There are times I can't say that I'm going to go out there and be polite all the time. There are times when you get into a nasty situation with somebody that it's not going to be nice, and things are going to be said. Diane, you know where I'm coming from this one. Being out of work for 3.5 months after an assault is not a good thing.
No.
Not a good thing. But you don't have to get out of your car and immediately be hardcore with people. I ask the guys, get out of the car, start up. What's wrong with approaching a vehicle or approaching a house with a smile on your face? It doesn't cost you anything, but work.
Unless they have a 50 caliber gun pointed at you, then you might not want to smile.
I won't be there if they have that.
okay, so
I get out there and do that. Yep.
I just want to ask you, back to that original question, what do you think is going on right now with the Black Lives Matter and the Hands Up, Don't Shoot? This increase chatter we see on Facebook, on Twitter, with probably predominantly minorities 25 and under.
It's you're going to have the chatter. I don't know if you're ever going to be able to stop that right now. It's just a matter of getting out and meeting with people. It's educating the younger groups, so they're not falling into the same footsteps. You know, as youngsters, they're very impressionable. And I say youngsters, even 20, 21, 22-year-olds, they're impressionable. They still are. They might be adults, but they're still impressionable. And you can work to turn that around. It takes good leadership. And when I say leadership, it's like in my position, and we're not a big department, but I can't do the things that I need to do or direct the PD in the direction I need it to do if I didn't have a strong number two, if I didn't have a strong person underneath me that, you know, sometimes I say something like, I think we need to do this, and he'll say, you know, Chief, how about if we did this? And we kind of turn things around. And we get out there and we meet with the kids and try to educate them. And like Diane said before, we did have a lot of distrust. There is still some distrust. It doesn't matter what you do. There's still going to be people out there that just do not like police officers. There are people out there that are going to love police officers no matter what you do. And then you're going to have a crew out there that will like you until you do something drastic. And then they'll still like you, but they'll be a little cautious at that time.
Well, that's kind of why I was hoping that the police, the Fraternal Order of Police or whoever, would maybe stand up to this program growing through schools that's teaching not to discipline, and say, hey, we may have a major problem in 10 years when these gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, are adults.
And yeah, and I think I think what we're looking at that point is each state has their own chiefs of police associations.
Sure.
And we tend to you have your state associations, and we all tend to stick together and try to come up with good programs, a good way to direct our officers throughout the state. And what we do in the state in which I'm in might not be the same as the state next to us. But it all tends to be, it kind of mirrors each other. And then what you do is you have the international chiefs of police who come out of the gurus on how we should be doing this. And there are a lot of reports that come out, a lot of programs that come out to help combat some of the issues we're seeing right now. And I am getting a lot of information from those sites. I do speak to chiefs from other states. Because luckily for me, knock on wood, I don't see the same thing here that they have down there.
That's good. That's good.
We actually have the audio for the Black Panthers. And what I'd like to do is play that and then just, Joe, jump in with exactly, once it's over, how that makes you feel as a police officer when you hear that.
Okay.
I don't know if you already heard it, though. Hammy, is it all set?
Marching down the avenue.
20 more pigs and we'll be through.
20 more pigs and we'll be through.
A pig is a pig, that's what I said.
The only good pig is the pig I said.
Yeah.
A pig is a pig, that's what I said.
The only good pig is the pig I said. Oink, oink, bang, bang. Oink, oink, bang, bang. Oink, oink, bang, bang. Oink, oink, bang, bang.
I don't know about you, but I would punch them all right in the face.
Well, that's one thing that... One, being a former military member, and two, being a police officer, people have a right to express their feelings, okay? And we look at that, they have the right to express their feelings as long as it's in an orderly manner. And it does, yes, it does grind on you when you hear it. It's irritating to hear it. But we also know you can't engage. You can't get involved in that. You can't retaliate. We have a position. We have to maintain that position. You have to be professional with it. Let them do what they're going to do. The problem is, you know, when people start making chants like that, they're talking about the police and how we have quota systems and how we're targeting certain people. They're doing the same thing.
Sure. They're calling for you to be shot. I mean,
yeah.
It's terrible.
And then what happens is when it does happen, well, that's not what we asked for. That's not what we intended. We were just
programmed. Sure.
Well, your words do strike out to others.
Sure, sure.
It is going to react on your words. And so as members of society, we do have to be careful when we're in these situations of what we're doing. Yes, it is aggravating when you hear it. But on the same token, I've been doing it long enough, you don't let it get to you. You try not to let it get to you. And if you do, you need to make sure that you have somebody around you that can get you off that line and away, because if you have to vent, you don't want to vent in that situation. You want to vent someplace else behind closed doors with somebody watching you, and just make sure you're comfortable at that point.
So I have a question. Where does it change in these chants from free speech to a threat?
That is a definite broad line, because we have, and what people fail to understand is police officers, police departments don't make the laws. We don't make the laws. That
is made
by a legislative body. All we are doing is enforcing the laws that the legislative body had put out there. We are the people that are entrusted with enforcing those laws. So when people tell me, it says, you know, I get so many people who say, we don't like your laws. They're not my laws, they're your laws.
Right, you're right.
It's your
right.
legislative body that makes those laws. We're just the guys that have to enforce it. That's what we do. And that's
you need to start carrying your representative's cards around in your pocket, and when they say that, you need to hand it to them.
Well, we have people that complain about it, even in the state in which I work, in the small town in which I work, and people will complain. I say, listen, I can't do anything about that. That is something you have to take up with your legislative body, because we don't make those laws. We don't.
Sure.
And we're held, we're held to a higher standard if we start overlooking those laws. And we do, as police officers, have discretion in a majority of the things that we will handle. There are certain things. DWI, you really don't have too much discretion. Excuse me. Domestic violence, you really don't have too much discretion there. Everything else, you basically have some discretion.
Right. So coming from the state of Colorado, which I'm in, what do you think about the marijuana laws?
I don't even want to touch that one.
Yeah, but we're going to have to face it in New Hampshire.
They have a legislative bill. I believe it's out. I don't know where they're at with it, but they're pushing to mandate that personal use, which is less than 2 ounces, I believe it is. Don't quote on that, but I know I'm on the radio. less than 2 ounces basically turns into a traffic ticket. And not an arrestable offense, no misdemeanor, just going to be a traffic ticket. So you issue the person a citation, they go to court with it, they take care of it that way.
One of the issues that we're seeing here is that it's very difficult to test somebody. If you pull them over, it's really difficult. At this point, we just don't have the technology to see if somebody has just recently smoked pot.
We have a hot dog in front of their face. You'll know.
Well, and this is what's happening with teenagers. So teenagers are going to parties, and if a cop raids a party, what happens is that they give all the teenagers breathalyzers, and the teenagers got smart pretty quick because they're going to come up, you know, fine as long as they're smoking pot or eating brownies instead of drinking. But you still are putting kids out on the road, or you're still having kids that are under the influence. And
well,
that's...
What are you talking about with that? Like in the state where we're at, we do have a duty to care for care, custody, and control. And what we do is we show up, we have juveniles that are there, and they are under the influence of some substance. We have a duty that we can detain that child, contact their parents. Parents have to come and pick up the child. They pick it. That's all we're mandated. You could charge them if you want to, but sometimes it's better just to get the child away from the party, deliver them to mom and dad. Mom and dad now take custody of the child. It is now their ball game. And we've served them. We've done our job. We made sure the child is safe, make sure they're not with the car.
Yes.
We have a law that mandates that if we come in custody or we come in contact with a juvenile, with alcohol, and you have alcohol and you're a minor, we have to separate you from the alcohol and separate you from the motor vehicle.
Yes. I think we're going to be the guinea pig state, and you all will learn through our mishaps what worked and what didn't work. I'm sure at some point the police here will be giving major, going around speaking to different police departments on what worked and what didn't work.
And we do get reports like that through police channels and stuff, and we see what's happening in different states and how it's working, and you know what works, what doesn't work. And if it's law and it's open and it's there, then from the police standpoint, if somebody makes it the law that's acceptable, then we just have to work on ways to combat, you know, impaired driving. That's the biggest thing. You don't want impaired driving.
Sure.
I mean, my concern, what I've been seeing around is a lot of people that have been driving under the influence of heroin, and they're passing out behind the wheel. They're crashing their vehicles. I'm wondering if that's going to be even more of an epidemic than, people under the influence of pot or alcohol at this point. It's happening left and right.
We have a horrible heroin We have a horrible heroin problem in Colorado.
Well, and you have officers that are now getting authorized to, I'm not sure what the name of the shot is. What's the shot that they're letting Narcan?
It's called Narcan, Naxalone, and it's an inhalant through the nose. We don't administer shots.
I wasn't sure what it was, but I know that they've been training for that. But it's like how do you stop that? How is that stopped? Can it be stopped?
It's going to be hard. It's hard, and the thing with the Narcan Naxalone. Police departments, we could get it as long as our officers are trained to use it, but then you have to store it, you have to maintain it, you have to keep records on it like anything else.
Sure.
You know, it's another task that you're throwing on the backs of police officers because we're already tasked with handling so many things out there already that, like the area I'm at, we handle criminal enforcement, motor vehicle enforcement, juvenile enforcement. There was a push for us to all be trained in handling with emotionally disturbed persons, and we do have training on that. Suicide, PTSD, even animal control, where we're stuck out handling. And I'm not speaking that we're the only ones. There are everybody throughout the country. And just so you have an idea, I've worked on the West Coast when I was military law enforcement. I've worked in another state as law enforcement and then currently in the state in which I'm in. So I worked in different areas. And everybody has the same stuff. They really do. But it's just so many things that are now put on our backs. And just trying to keep up with things. That's the hardest part, is just trying to keep up with it.
And you're probably the most second hated position up there.
What's that?
I said, and your position is probably the second most hated besides politicians.
Well, it depends on how you present yourself.
Yeah.
It's how your department
presents yourself.
And that's the thing, is just trying to make sure that your officers get everything that they need to do the job effectively and keep their heads up and be positive about the job, not turn into a group of stormtroopers. You know, I want guys to know you're not out there to kiss people's butts. That's not what we're there for. You're there to be polite, to be respectful, to be courteous. But when it comes down to it, you got to do your job. You have to do your
job. Sure.
It's the point where you're going to have to go fisticuffs with somebody. It might happen. It happens. It does happen. I'm living proof of it happening to me at least twice. It's going to happen. And there are guys that work in big cities that probably do it. I don't want to say daily, but talk to guys in big cities, and they could be like definitely every other shift. Doing
oh, Diane and I have a friend who was, he's off right now. He's on disability as a police officer because he was in Chicago and he was off because of budget cuts. He was riding alone. He got out to assess the situation and got actually hit from behind. He's lucky he's alive. He could have been shot. And he went down. He was out. Dispatch actually sent somebody to go find him because he wasn't answering his radio. So it's a scary job, and I think people need to understand our police are not paid $1 million a year.
No.
And they put their lives on the line, and it's nonsense to think that they are just trying to stir things up. It's nonsense to think that they want, I don't think as much paperwork as you have after a shooting, I don't think any cop sets out at the beginning of the day to go try to shoot somebody.
Well, I think someone that we know said it best where they said when they leave in the morning, all they want to do is come home to their family. They're not going out to, you know, bust someone's chops or go out and attack a black man or shoot him because they feel like it. All their goal is to go out, do their job safely, and come home to their family. Unfortunately, with these attacks that have been happening and the ambush of the New York PD, the NYPD officers, the Los Angeles officers, the poor officer in Pennsylvania that was stopping to buy his son a birthday gift and, you know, was heroic trying to stop a robbery and lost his life because of it. these aren't, it's not what they set out to do every morning. Yes, they will protect and they will do their job. And unfortunately, they will die for it sometimes. And I think the lack of respect gets frustrating for the people like me, Jody, a lot of people. And I think it's really frustrating that, we don't see you guys getting the respect that you guys deserve, that you should be getting, all for doing a job.
But you remember, when we got into the job, you got the job to do a certain thing. And regardless, and it sounds cliche, but everybody got into this job to help people, because that's, if you didn't have it inside, you wouldn't be doing it. Some guys, some girls get into this job because it's a badge and a gun, and that's the wrong reasons. But then most of us get in because you grew up, you idolized the police officers that you saw on TV. That's what you wanted to do with your life, and that's what you're meant to do. And this job is meant for certain people. It's not meant for everybody. And you got to remember, the stuff that you see day in, day out comes home with you. And you got to make sure you don't take it home to your family. Lord knows how many times my wife has heard me go on about things. And there are certain things that you cannot unsee. And I tell my wife, I joke around, and I said, I've got 22 and a half years of crap in my head of stuff that you see, and it's hard to get rid of it. But
yeah,
the fact that that's part of your job and you just deal with it. And if you don't find an outlet, then it's going to be pent up, and then you're going to take it out on somebody, and we don't want that. So it's a matter of these things that happen. What's going on with law enforcement is your upper echelon, your administrative staff, needs to make sure that your officers, make sure the officers have the items that they need to do their jobs properly. Make sure they have proper work schedules. Make sure they get the proper amount of time off duty so they can make sure they can relax, they can de-stress, get it out of their system. Make sure they have all the proper training. The state in which I work requires 8 hours mandatory training besides your use of force training. And to me, 8 hours a year is not acceptable. You need more than that. So we try to put our officers through as many training classes as possible, but it's not always easy with lack of manpower.
Well, we want to thank you, because I really feel like what you said, getting police out there and seeing that these are just regular people. They're not out to shoot black kids. They're not out to end anybody's life. They are simply enforcing the laws that our legislators have put in place. So thank you for your service.
Thank
you for coming on. And I don't know if you know this or not, but Diane and I do a show on human trafficking. It's the first Wednesday of every month. And I don't know if at some point you'd be willing to come on for one of those shows, because I think we would love to hear law enforcement's perspective from that as well.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll talk to Diane about that.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot, Joe.
Oh, no, I'll talk to Diane about that.
I put him on the spot all the time.
we might put my number two in, who's been sending text messages to me. So that might be a good show.
Is he
for
saying
him
you have a sexy
too
voice over the air? Hi, Frank.
Okay, well, this is not a dating service.
Yeah.
That's another show.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Joe. I greatly appreciate you coming on, and you really give a lot of good insight. And I think people, more law enforcement should be listening to you.
Yeah.
Great suggestions.
I get my ideas from those who have come before me, and those, and like I said, I depend on other chiefs from big cities and other chiefs from small towns, and I'm just taking information from them.
Okay, and who? And really quickly, who was your idol, police idol, that you watched on TV?
My police idol? Oh, I used to
yeah, that you watched on TV that made
Adam
you want to be a police officer.
Adam 12
Adam 12.
Adam 12.
Adam 12. Okay, well, mine is Justified and Nick Searcy. So talk about paperwork in that office. Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you so much, and we're going to wrap things up here.
Okay.
We have.
And we'll send you the link for the blog so you can share it with everybody.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. So tomorrow night we have Stovetop Politics with Virginia Cruda again here on AltCom Radio, and Friday night we have Getting Hammered with Steve and Stevie. So Stevie J West. So please tune in.
Have a great night, everybody.
Man, I give you no break. Not even your eyes, you know, I give you no break. Well, hey, bad boys, bad boys. Oh, what you gonna do? Oh, what you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. Oh, what you gonna do? Oh, what you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. Oh, what you gonna do? Oh, what you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. Oh, what you gonna do? Oh, what you gonna do when you gonna do when they come for you? You chuck it on down.